the World Saxophone Quartet performing Hamyet Bluett's I Heard That. Bluett is on baritone, Julius Hemphill and Oliver Lake on altos, and David Murray on tenor. It's from the WSQ's 9th album, Rhythm and Blues, released in 1989. Julius Hemphill died in 1995. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, in a program today that requires you to have a notebook and a pen handy. You're going to be taking a lot of notes, and you're going to be listening with 10 ears to what is about to be shared with you. And of course, we can't ignore the big news of yesterday. The Trump visit, the flyby to Mexico, and his speech last night, or yesterday evening, on immigration. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump's hasty flyby meeting yesterday with President Enrique Peña Nieto of Mexico served as a backdrop for a speech he made later in the day at a rally in Phoenix to present his policies on immigration. A raucous crowd enthusiastically cheered as Trump railed against President Barack Obama's failed immigration policies, which he said Hillary Clinton not only supports, but will add to with new policies of her own that also are destined to fail. Trump laid out a 10-point plan he said will go into effect on day one of his presidency. Topping the list are building a great wall on the U.S.-Mexico border, mass deportations of the undocumented, and significantly beefing up law enforcement agencies to identify, hunt down, and deport those who have committed crimes while in the United States or even in their countries of origin. Media gurus have been analyzing the combined effect of Trump's meeting with President Peña Nieto, and so our Lead Stories program, our listeners, offer today their unique perspectives on the significant development in this increasingly tight Clinton-Trump contest, in which both candidates' campaigns have been hobbled by self-inflicted wounds. We're going to hear a little bit of what Trump said when he got to the meat of his points on immigration. And then right after that, it's an extended enough, it's about 15 minutes. And after that, our job is to deconstruct the significance. Now, we don't want your opinion. We just want you to translate, tell us what is the significance of whatever point that you're making about Donald Trump's position on immigration. So here's Donald Trump yesterday speaking to a very raucous and enthusiastic crowd after first meeting with President Enrique Peña Nieto in Mexico. And during a flyby, then he comes back to the U.S. and presents as if he were already the head of state and tells his peeps what it is he's going to do about immigration.
To all the politicians, donors, and special interests, hear these words from me and all of you today. There is only one core issue in the immigration debate, and that issue is the well-being of the American people. Nothing even comes a close second. Hillary Clinton, for instance, talks constantly about her fears that families will be separated. But she's not talking about the American families who have been permanently separated from their loved ones because of a preventable homicide, because of a preventable death, because of murder. No, she's only talking about families who come here in violation of the law. We will treat everyone living or residing in our country with great dignity. So important. We will be fair, just, and compassionate to all. But our greatest compassion must be for our American citizens. Thank you. President Obama and Hillary Clinton. Have engaged in gross dereliction of duty by surrendering the safety of the American people to open borders. And you know it better than anybody right here in Arizona. You know it. President Obama and Hillary Clinton support sanctuary cities. They support catch and release on the border. They support visa overstays. They support the release of dangerous criminals from detention. And they support unconstitutional executive amnesty. Hillary Clinton has pledged amnesty in her first 100 days, and her plan will provide Obamacare, Social Security, and Medicare for illegal immigrants, breaking the federal budget. On top of that, she promises uncontrolled, low-skilled immigration that continues to reduce jobs and wages for American workers, and especially for African American and Hispanic workers within our country, our citizens. Most incredibly, because to me this is unbelievable, we have no idea who these people are, where they come from. I always say, Trojan horse, watch what's going to happen, folks. It's not going to be pretty. This includes her plan to bring in 620,000 new refugees from Syria and that region over a short period of time. And even yesterday, when you were watching the news, you saw thousands and thousands of people coming in from Syria. What is wrong with our politicians, our leaders, if we can call them that? What the hell are we doing? Hard to believe, hard to believe. Now that you've heard about Hillary Clinton's plan, about which she has not answered a single question, let me tell you about my plan. And you notice? And you notice, all the time, for weeks and weeks, they're debating my plan, debating it, talking about it. What about this? What about that? They never even mention her plan on immigration because she doesn't want to get into the quagmire. It's a tough one. She doesn't know what she's doing except open borders and let everybody come in and destroy our country, by the way. While Hillary Clinton meets only with donors and lobbyists, my plan was crafted with the input from federal immigration officers, very great people, among the top immigration experts anywhere in this country who represent workers, not corporations, very important to us. I also worked with lawmakers who've led on this issue on behalf of American citizens for many years, and most importantly, I've met with the people directly impacted by these policies. So important. Number one, are you ready? Are you ready? We will build a great wall along the southern border. And Mexico will pay for the wall. Remember. 100%. They don't know it yet, but they're going to pay for the wall. And they're great people and great leaders, but they're going to pay for the wall. On day one, we will begin working on an impenetrable, physical, tall, powerful, beautiful southern border wall. We will use the best technology, including above and below ground sensors, that's the tunnels. Remember that, above and below. Above and below ground sensors, towers, aerial surveillance, and manpower to supplement the wall, find and dislocate tunnels, and keep out criminal cartels. And Mexico, you know that, will work with us. I really believe it. Mexico will work with us. I absolutely believe it. And especially after meeting with their wonderful, wonderful president today, I really believe they want to solve this problem along with us, and I'm sure they will. Number two, we are going to end catch and release. We catch them, oh, go ahead. We catch them, go ahead. Under my administration, anyone who illegally crosses the border will be detained until they are removed out of our country and back to the country from which they came. And they'll be brought great distances. We're not dropping them right across. They learned that, President Eisenhower. They'd drop them across, right across, and they'd come back and across. Then when they flew them to a long distance, all of a sudden, that was the end. We will take them great distances, but we will take them to the country where they came from, okay? Number three, this is the one I think it's so great. It's hard to believe people don't even talk about it. Zero tolerance for criminal aliens. Zero, zero. Zero. They don't come in here. According to federal data, there are at least 2 million, think of it, criminal aliens now inside of our country. 2 million people, criminal aliens. We will begin moving them out day one, as soon as I take office, day one, in joint operation with local, state, and federal law enforcement. Now, just so you understand, the police, who we all respect, say hello to the police. Boy, they don't get the credit they deserve, I can tell you. They're great people. But the police and law enforcement, they know who these people are. They live with these people. They get mocked by these people. They can't do anything about these people, and they want to. They know who these people are. Day one, my first hour in office, those people are gone. And you can call it deported if you want. The press doesn't like that term. You can call it whatever the hell you want. They're gone. Beyond the 2 million. And there are vast numbers of additional criminal, illegal immigrants who have fled. But their days have run out in this country. The crime will stop. They're going to be gone. It will be over. They're going out fast. Moving forward, we will issue detainers for illegal immigrants who are arrested for any crime whatsoever, and they will be placed into immediate removal proceedings if we even have to do that. We will terminate the Obama administration's deadly, and it is deadly, non-enforcement policies that allow thousands of criminal aliens to freely roam our streets, walk around, do whatever they want to do, crime all over the place. That's over. That's over, folks. That's over. Since 2013 alone, the Obama administration has allowed 300,000 criminal aliens to return back into United States communities. These are individuals encountered or identified by ICE, but who were not detained or processed for deportation, because it wouldn't have been politically correct. My plan also includes cooperating closely with local jurisdictions to remove criminal aliens immediately. We will restore the highly successful Secure Communities program, good program. We will expand and revitalize the popular 287G partnerships, which will help to identify hundreds of thousands of deportable aliens in local jails that we don't even know about. Both of these programs have been recklessly gutted by this administration, and those were programs that worked. This is yet one more area where we are headed in a totally opposite direction. There's no common sense, there's no brain power in our administration by our leader or our leaders. None, none, none. On my first day in office, I am also going to ask Congress to pass Kate's Law, named for Kate Steinle, to ensure that criminal aliens convicted of illegal reentry receive strong, mandatory minimum sentences. Strong. And then we get them out. Another reform I'm proposing is the passage of legislation named for Detective Michael Davis and Deputy Sheriff Danny Oliver, two law enforcement officers recently killed by a previously deported illegal immigrant. The Davis-Oliver bill will enhance cooperation with state and local authorities to ensure that criminal immigrants and terrorists are swiftly, really swiftly, identified and removed. And they will go fast. Believe me, they're going to go fast. We are going to triple the number of ICE deportation officers. Within ICE, I am going to create a new special deportation task force focused on identifying and quickly removing the most dangerous criminal illegal immigrants in America who have evaded justice, just like Hillary Clinton has evaded justice, okay? Maybe they'll be able to deport her.
Donald Trump, waxing philosophic within his limitations on immigration, his immigration policy. This was a very well choreographed event, beginning actually in Mexico with a meeting with the president, Enrique Peña Nieto, who today is taking a lot of heat from his countrymen and women for even seeing Donald Trump on such short notice. He kind of just dropped in. And after that, coming back to the United States in Phoenix and having this rally there in order to present his plan for immigration and his policies on immigration. 888-874-4888. Now, we don't want you necessarily to reiterate. We just heard what he said. We want you to interpret for us the significance of this event. That means you're going to be telling us, other than what was said, and it's clear what he said, it is important for us to also understand what it meant. All right, so that's the task. What did this whole thing mean? And for that, of course, we will have to do some context. You'll give us an idea of how it fits into the current contest between Donald Trump and everybody else, but particularly Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, who are running in a tight race for the presidency. And why this particular topic? Why is it his first blast? Why is it so much attention? Why are people reacting so very enthusiastically about it? And what does this all mean about the tenor of the political contest that we are experiencing now, this presidential race? All right, that's the task. That's the task. So you are our political gurus today, and I'm expecting a lot of guruing going on. 888-874-4888. It's important when these things happen to pay attention not only to what is said, but what is meant. And that gives us an idea. It gives us a preview of what we can expect, perhaps not even so far down the road, but almost immediately. Bruce from New York, tell us what the significance of this event was to you.
Well, the significance to me is that Donald Trump recognizes and the clique around him that that the country is will soon be no longer a white country, and that whites are likely to be in a minority. And I believe that that is deep significance. Over and above that, I am not pleased to have to take anything that Trump says seriously. I am concerned that such an individual could be propelled to one step away from the leadership of this country. It says something about a core of 40% of the people in this country who fail to recognize the nature of this man.
Does he have a point on immigration at all?
Well, yes. I mean, he has a point on immigration, but he is not talking about immigration generally. He is talking about Mexican immigration. He is talking of the immigration of people of color, right? He is not talking about Europeans who may be here. He is not talking about Europeans who may want to come here. He is talking about Mexicans, and he's talking about people of color.
About Mexicans? I think you hit that nail on the head. He is absolutely focusing on Mexican immigration by Mexicans, and why?
But you know, at another level, Mexicans are just maybe a way of disguising a deeper racist intent. Yeah, So yes, of course, you know, the factual level, yes, I agree with you. But then I think he's using Mexicans as a moniker for all people of color, right? And this fits in with his history, his racist history, the racism of his father and that type of thing. So that's my feeling about it.
With this speech, has he gained, first of all, with his visit to Mexico, and then he follows through with this speech in Phoenix, Arizona, has he gained a lot of ground, you think, in his political base and generally in the eyes of the electorate?
Well, I would say no. I would say that he has maybe a core support of about 40%, and for the life of me, I can't understand how 40% of the people of this country could support O'Malley for so long. They've been supporting him now for what, over a year and a half, yeah? You know, and it tells me something about those people who support him. But no, I don't believe that he will extend that much further. You know, attempts are being made to sway black people and other people of color, yeah, to vote against their own interests, right? On both sides, not only on his side, on both sides. You know, Donald Trump seems to recognize that is not inconceivable, to get black people and even the very Mexicans that he's talking about to vote against their very interests, because we always do, yeah? Just like how we will do for Clinton, right? So he is trying to buy into something that has nothing to really do with us.
Well, you got quite a few messages. They were meant to be sublime. They were meant to be very indiscreet, but they clearly came through to you very, very clearly. And I think I agree with you. He is using the Mexican immigration issue as a way of coming obliquely at the larger issue, because by heaping all of these maladies and all of these problems with Mexican immigrants, he's actually talking about people of color generally in the United States. He's also reaffirming his relationship with his people. They understand the language very well.
Oh, precisely.
They understand what he's saying.
Yeah.
And that's why they were so enthusiastic about it.
Yeah.
Thanks for getting us started.
Right, but you treat that he doesn't gain any more traction. And although I'm seeing some recent polls where Clinton is losing, you know, 4-6% in certain areas. But although he may not be getting any tractions with the majority of black people, the majority of people of color, he believes that he is in the fight, and he just needs us to mislead people for once, and then the real truth about Trump is going to come out, right?
That's my feeling. But so far, as a politician and now a guy who's learning the ropes of politics, do you give him credit for just basically utilizing this, even though you disagree with his reasons and with the intent? Do you give him credit for basically understanding what it is he had to do to bring his status up in a race where he was lagging?
Well, no, I don't give him credit. I don't believe that. I think Donald Trump is fairly set in his mind as to who he is and, you know, how he sees the world. And I do not believe that his brain could be re-engineered to be more malleable, to be more considerate. I don't believe that at all. What I do believe is that if he is given a persuasive argument at a point in time, he can go and he can parrot it, you know, for a limited period of time. But once that point has passed, it doesn't change his fundamental nature. You know, the next day he's back to who he is. You know, this big thing in his campaign about letting Trump be Trump. It's all about this. It's about letting him be the racist that he is. Letting him be the bigot that he is. Let him envision this world where white people are superior. And this thing is a deep fear that the historian who passed away recently, Elsa, I can't remember her name, last name, Dr. Belsing, I can't remember her name. She talked about this. She talked about, you know, the psychosis of racism. I think...
Francis Quest-Welting.
Precisely. And I think Donald Trump, you know, to be thrown up at this time, you know, he represents everything that she describes. every time I see him, I think about her.
All right. Well, thank you for getting us started today.
Right. Okay.
What are you thinking about Donald Trump and the significance of that speech and the significance of his flyby to Mexico before that speech? 888-874-4888. Jay from Queens, what have you to say?
Hey, it's Reese. Good afternoon.
Hi. Thank you.
You know, Donald Trump, it's like if you watch his move, the flyby or the flyover Mexico, that was the staging to suggest that he had some international, it's like Clinton flying to various Kosovo or somewhere to get some study under her belt or his, but I'll speak to Donald to get some study under his belt to say, I've done international travel. I've met with heads of state, even though I wasn't welcome. So I had to drop in when they least expected me. And then he goes back and panders to his base to get, and on a specific topic where he probably had the strongest numbers supporting him, because all the issues that he talked about, he hasn't put any substance behind any of them. And when he talked about the wall, he talked as if he was actually involved in the construction phase of it. We're going to make those walls, those holes really deep. I mean, with all due respect.
But I want to ask you, though, to return to the very first point that you made.
Mm-hmm.
What is the significance of Donald Trump just getting up and going to Mexico and basically barnstorming into the president's day?
Well, one.
And, what does that say?
Well, it says there's no respect for the Mexican president or the protocols that approach to conducting business. He thinks he's flying into some private sector company, and he had no regard to, no understanding. I think he's understanding because he's been guided by so-called brilliant tacticians who are actually devious. But essentially, he had, in other words, you have no rights. I need respect. I can insult your people, insult you too, flying into your country, and you greeted me. It was a mistake on the Mexican president's point to meet with him, but I think he said, send that fool in. Let me tell him one more time. We're not paying for this wall. Okay, we clear? And Donald didn't want to talk about that. He said in his press conference, I met with him and we did not have the discussion. But what I heard was the Mexican president did have discussion up front. Said, I'm not paying for the wall. Let's be clear. Now, we do want to stop drug transmissions across borders. We are concerned about those issues. We can agree on those things. But Donald couldn't probably articulate, couldn't even recap what his discussion is, because without, it's easy to throw out insults, but let's be real clear. Donald is a simpleton.
But hold on there for a second, because this is a very, very important thing to get, and you nailed it on the head. You do not, it is not the way you visit a head of state by just jumping in your plane and you're going to Mexico. And next thing you know, you're having a meeting with the head of state and so forth. It was, in fact, an expression of contempt. It was
correct.
The kind of
absolutely
behavior one calls the ugly American behavior. I
absolutely
don't have to observe protocols. I don't have to make plans. What if something had happened to him, or somebody decided that they couldn't stand the fact that Donald Trump was in the country and did something violent to him or something like that? Now the whole country is going to be held responsible. But when you decide as a citizen, he has never been elected to anything.
Mm-hmm.
He is not a representative of the American people, certainly not yet. And he shows this kind of conduct to let people understand that he has contempt for Mexico. And then in his speech, you heard him mention, oh, you're wonderful, wonderful, a very patronizing language.
Yes.
You're wonderful, wonderful president. Oh, yes, I met with him. You know, this is, mm-hmm, but that was very significant. And it is not to be dismissed.
But it's
perhaps
Donald
is more
is
significant
flex
than even the speech. This idea of a presidential hopeful behaving this way in a
from
manner that is
seen
extremely undiplomatic and very, very bad manners.
Intrigued.
But continue.
I got to tell you, I have no hope for the two candidates, these nominees. We've essentially been bottom fishing. From all we have found and discovered about Hillary, not only the accusation, but actual facts have come out, but also Donald. I just dismiss the Republican Party and this particular candidate, although he's not for respect or for any respect expectation of his ability to be judicious, thoughtful, or in any way how to comport himself as a politician, not because he isn't, but simply put, this man is really simple. He is not a complicated individual. He is a showman. That's why he went to his show. His whole demeanor, you heard the words he used, I'm going to give you a show, people, and here's how I'm going to do it. He thinks he's on Broadway. So Trump is going to, it really trumped all his followers. I'm from New York. I know Trump. I know a little bit more than some people, very close. I'm not that close to his family, but I literally been in their company. I can't speak for all of them, but I'm contemptuous of him because he's actually an imbecile. He's not a very bright person. I don't know.
Listen, Donald, you can't say that.
I
will challenge you on that point. He has some very keen observation and understanding of the people that he is speaking to. I mean, they packed the convention center to hear him.
He said, I'm low information voters.
And he is gaining traction to start out the new leg of his campaign with this particular topic was not at all accidental. And then to do all that choreography, the staging, the going to Mexico, I could go to Mexico. That was what that was supposed to signify. I could cross your borders anytime.
Right, but
I can do that. So
Giuliani's that insidious. That's his crew around, all the bullies that are around him, from Julie to Christie and all of that. But Donald, there's a core of goodness in him, and I really think there is. But I also think that he really is that narcissistic, and he's a demagogue. And because of his sense of I'm gonna do the show. He picks people who have no good intentions around him, as well as he's just that malleable. And he genuflects like most politicians. Oh, yeah, he gets from this audience, he says this. He gets from that audience, he says that. But I think he just doesn't really have a clue what he's doing. And they're allowing him to do this, but it's so evident that this man is really not presidential or in any way someone you want to have represent you. Not only how he conducts himself, mannerisms, but what he knows. He doesn't know anything.
All right.
This is the insult, but he loves low-information voters, like I said, and uneducated. He says it.
Well, you added your 2 cents. Let's see what people think about it. Milagros from Manhattan, you're on the air. Milagros, you're on the air. Okay. 888-874-4888. When a speech is given, we talk about this all the time, you look at the context of the speech. What is happening? What is the environment of this event? And that's why we're going into this business of the flyby into Mexico, and then you come back to Arizona having demonstrated that, hey, I ain't afraid of the Mexicans, not even the president. I don't have to go through the elaborate process of actually making an appointment and having diplomatic protocols observed. I don't have to do that. This is Mexico. Who needs to do that? And then come back to a crowd, and the entire narrative is coated, is just loaded with allegories, meaning that he ostensibly is speaking about immigration, but is he? David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, I've heard so many people talk about Donald Trump being an idiot, an imbecile, and whatnot. To me, this man is a brilliant man. The fact is that he was able to defeat all those people to get the Republican nomination for president. I mean, you can't be an idiot and pull that off, and he pulled that off. Now, the thing about Mexico, when he goes there and he talks to the president of Mexico, there had to be some communication beforehand, and the president of Mexico could have not agreed to that at all. You know, he could have said, no, I'm not going to meet with you, and that would have been the end of it. So, you know, I mean, we have to really look at that. What I'm saying here, especially with the rally with his base yesterday, is that this is just more of the what you have to do when you get scapegoats. When you're going to do something, you got to bring their attention to something else. You got to have lots of scapegoats, and Mexicans are one of his choices. And he's doing a good job at it. His base loves this type of thing. But in terms of what Trump is really about, I'm sure he's a neoconservative and wants to put in neoliberal policies. And all the things he's talking about of hiring more police or immigration agents and whatnot, that's going to be taken out of social benefits for people. And people don't get it. But you got to bring attention to some situation where you point out your scapegoats and you get people focus on that so that you can move ahead and get to where you want. The point is that with all the warts that are upon Clinton and whatnot, you know, she is, to me, I think she's really in danger. He may have some things that come up as a surprise, and he's going to make some real traction in this whole situation with this election.
Well, let me ask you then, is immigration and immigration as he defines it a problem, a legitimate problem to address as a top priority in his campaign?
Well, I don't think that that should be a top priority.
But it is for him.
The point is that you have to put some attention on something to kind of drive people to support you when they're suffering under this current capitalist system we have, where you have all these poor American people, poor little white people. Poor people all over the place. Half the people are poor and they're poor. And he recognizes that. So the economy, the capitalist economy, is failing. It's giving all the subsidies, really, to the ruling class in terms of giving it to corporations, not to people. They have a very weak social infrastructure here in the United States. Nothing as good as what they have in most Western European countries and Japan and places like that. So you get attention to other things. So you present yourself as someone who can change conditions for people by concentrating on the scapegoats. And in this case, the poster persons for scapegoats are the Mexicans in this election. And that's what Trump is doing.
All right. Well, thank you. We have a call from Tokyo. Yasu, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello, Ms. Tracy.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. I listened to you since the first show.
Thank you.
It's always been insightful. And I do have several things to offer. And one thing is factual in that it's the Mexican president who invited Hillary and Trump to visit and to have a talk with him. So although Trump may be quite an arrogant and overbearing person, it's not that he suddenly dropped in. And so there were arrangements.
Suddenly dropped in, even though the president of Mexico did encourage the leading candidates, put the quotes marks around that, to come into Mexico to talk to him at any time, there is a protocol. And the protocol isn't just, well, I'm 20 minutes away, I'll be seeing you within the next half hour. That's not how it's done. The Mexican media reported that the president of Mexico had very little time, and his administration had very little time to prepare, because just as when Trump is traveling domestically, even the security detail has to be worked out way in advance. So imagine if that happens as a candidate, what happens when you are visiting a president, a head of state, and you are not a head of state. So there are things about clearances, not only for the candidate himself, but the people involved. What if there's an assassin in Trump's troop going to Mexico? These are the things that they all have to do. There's a protocol and procedure that is followed to the letter, generally, when heads of state or when dignitaries of any sort are making such a visit.
Maybe I'm misinformed, but maybe it is also the Mexican media who is quite against Trump. Well, what media is not against Trump, frankly? Even in Japan, and everything is always negative.
What for you is the significance of the speech and the significance of the visit by Trump to Mexico?
Well, I do think that she has to have some intelligence and cunning to be in the position where he is. In Japan, as well as the States, there's plenty of cases where a man inherited or was bequeathed a large sum of money, but just squandered it quite spectacularly. So Trump had to be at least have some intelligence or great cunning to be where he is, and he is a problem solver by nature to be a top manager. It might be that although just from the listeners, but I get a sense that people assume that he does not have any such capacity, intellectual capacity, to do much more than be a carnival barker, that he may actually have gone to Mexico to figure out whether there are real solutions to this so-called immigrant problem. And the other factual thing that I did want to offer, in which Trump may be unaware or just ignoring, is that a lot of people who are coming into the U.S. aren't from Mexico, and Mexico has a really tough border on their southern front to keep other Latin Americans out. So, and a lot of people of Latin America are coming from countries that have really stabilized economies, and they do want to escape, and not just an economy, but just for safety. So for various reasons, people are coming into the U.S., and the people I've met in the stateside have been from places like Honduras and Guatemala and Venezuela. But I haven't seen many so that's just a factual point. But I do think that, and the wall, kind of like a, hopefully it's a symbolic thing and he'll backtrack from it, but there are many fundamental reasons why people do come to the U.S. But once people do come to the U.S. legally or illegally, there's also data showing that there's a whole lot of them just moving back to their home country because the U.S. is not doing too well either.
Correct.
I think so. This whole immigrant thing, and you look back at history, it's always that other that really seems to solidify the host or the native population, which in Trump's case would be the white. You know, even had, what was the last name? I should know it, I'm a lawyer, but you had John Adams enact a law basically banning illegal, anyway, shouldn't digress too much, but there's been a history of being very hard on the perceived others, but it's also a great way to unite the people to back you when the real solutions and real problems are so complex. It's a shortcut to blame others.
And it has worked very effectively throughout the course of history. I mean, we saw that in Germany, where Adolf Hitler basically galvanized an entire nation over this concept of, you know, the purity. Our purity is being challenged here by the presence of these undesirables. We've got to get rid of them.
Yes,
and then in that spirit, people give permission for the most atrocious things to happen. And this has been a very effective galvanizing effect. And it's working very well for Donald Trump. The idea that when you create a clear line of demarcation between us and them, and you see how it is translating into the fervor of this idea of American identity. And on the flip side, you get it in its raw form with Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton responds to the notion, the liberal version, of American exceptionalism. It's just the same. It's the same narrative with a little bit more velvet. You know, the American sense of exceptionalism. America is exceptional. Americans are exceptional people. No, Americans are just like everybody else all over the world, trying to put one foot ahead of the other and trying to get through their day. So this is the flip side of the same coin. Thanks so much for calling in.
May I have a last quick point, third point, which, thank you, is that what Trump, though a difference with Hillary, seems to be that, and it's maybe an ironic thing or maybe it's intentional, but Trump is favoring the citizens over non-citizens. And so perhaps there's some kind of nuance that he is working into his narrative, that he praised or respects the Mexican president's patriotism or nationalism, and he wants to be the champion of American citizens, Uber Alice.
but you know, even in that, he is careful to make a distinction. There are citizens, and then there are citizens. The Mexicans are taking jobs, and then he defines it. The Mexicans, the low-paying, the low-wage-earning Mexicans, that is how he is presenting it, are taking the jobs of minorities, African-Americans and minorities. I mean, really, it is so racist. You can't imagine that somebody actually sat down and wrote this without thinking what it is they're saying. All of the other things apply across the board because he's talking about preserving white dominance, white supremacy, essentially, in the United States. The agency of that happens to be immigration. Immigration has thrown that out of kilter, and it's time to get it back into proper order. But he is in trying to appeal to citizens. He makes a distinction just the same, that in order to attract the support of African-Americans, he's saying, and Latino-Americans, he's saying, the Mexicans are coming and taking your jobs. As if to say, are we all in the same economic category? Are we all employed in pretty much the same spheres? Are we all, you know, it's so racist that even he doesn't get it. It's ridiculous. Thanks so much for your call. That brings us to the end of our program today. It is important. Sometimes, you know, you listen to the words said and whatnot because, of course, you have to do that. But then you have to go a little deeper and start thinking about, apart from what is said, which is immediately discernible, what is actually being meant here? What is this supposed to mean? And for that, you have to do a bit of composition work. You have to look at the environment, what precedes the speech, the environment of the speech, the tone of the speech, the actions of the individuals prior to giving the speech, what might have been going on with them that caused them to select this time, this place, this speech, and what is the message? Because there are several levels of meaning, typically, in any speech. There's what they want to say or what they want people to believe and to perceive as the message. But under all of that, there are several layers that are not necessarily expressed, but that are implied or that are intricately woven into a speech. So you have to listen on many different levels, as my mother would say, you have to put on your listening ears because you might miss it. When a speech is planned for wide consumption, it appears to be straightforward and simple until you start deconstructing it. And you begin to discover intent. You begin to discover something about the speaker. You begin to discover attitudes. You begin to even discover what the future might be in the eyes of this person speaking. And you put it all together, you get a very interesting picture. And if you put it together right, it helps you prepare for what's to come. Thanks for joining me. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. Let me know what you think about the program. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. And tomorrow, it's Free Your Mind Friday. Get your brains in gear. See ya. We'll be right back.